Need to find the perfect ice bucket to take with you when you travel? Look no further than Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob Has a Podcast when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who's the Monopoly slumlord of podcasting, Rob Sestavino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our last Comic Standing wrap-up show. We are live in person, but we're not recording this live, and we are talking about episode number, hour three. I'm not sure if it's episode two or episode three, technically, but we are talking about the Invitational's night three, and here's my co-host to talk about all this, Mr. Mike Bloom. Mike, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. I'm surprised you went with the Monopoly slumlord. I thought you would have coined yourself a slumberjack from all the plaid that you wear.
That's true. However, that was not a hashtag.
It was not. That's true. It was not hashtag worthy for NBC, apparently.
So now I watched the show on NBC.com last week, Mike. And so they didn't have anything popping up on the bottom of the screen. Did they have as many hashtags last week?
I didn't see any hashtags aside from hashtag last comic. That was so I didn't see any sort of incidental hashtags like they do a lot on, obviously, these CBS reality shows, and they've kind of integrated it into their Fox programming as well. I didn't see any last week. I have no idea what sort of changes went on at the studio where they said we need to bring in hashtags, even though there were only two of them, which were a little lackluster to begin with.
I believe there might have been three? I feel like there was, okay, Monopoly Slumlord, then Bald and Beautiful. I feel like there was something with the judges at the end.
The other one I saw was hashtag last comic, but I might not have had the eagle eyes at that point.
Well, I'm always on the lookout for the hashtags. Can we just talk about the state of the hashtag in reality TV? Because I feel like this is a very interesting meta subject. So, all right. So basically, at this point, all three of the big three CBS shows are doing these, right?
Yeah.
Have we seen, I forget if on Big Brother, if we saw wacky hashtags on Big Brother.
Big Brother, I don't think we see the wacky hashtags. We see them for the competitions, if you remember. Like, after the live show, Julie Chen says, you know, hashtag prize or hashtag penalty, and we'll figure out what they get if they drop out of the endurance competition. I don't think there were any, like, you know, hashtags that would show up of, like, hashtag rat floater or hashtag racism.
I bet we do see that this summer. I would be pretty convinced. Now, what about on ABC? Do we get that in The Bachelor or anything like that?
I don't believe so. I watch The Bachelor from time to time. My fiance is a much bigger Bachelor fan, but I don't really see a lot of that. Outside of CBS reality shows, the hashtag really makes its way into the singing reality shows and the talent ones, especially with American Idol. There's a hashtag that they came up with for the results show that are like judges yes and judges no, in terms of like, or Idol agree and Idol disagree, in terms of do you agree or disagree with the judge's decision. And then The Voice, which is, you know, the topic of discussion for the past couple of weeks on this show, has used a Twitter save. So basically there's like, it's like a power of veto almost. There's bottom three contestants, and then America votes like in that five to 10 minute span on who they want to save using hashtags. And then whoever gets the most hashtag votes gets saved that night.
But as far as the wacky hashtag goes, we know that CBS has been, you know, on this for pretty much the last year or so. Have the other networks now, is this a sign that they've followed suit where wacky thing happens or funny term is used and that becomes the hashtag?
I've seen it a couple times on scripted shows. I know New Girl in its first couple seasons actually used incidental hashtags. They would come up in certain scenes of the show that I guess the writers thought would take off into some sort of catchphrase. Most recently, I saw it on an episode of Community, which aired a few months ago. But other than that, it's actually pretty sparse. It's not much of a weekly occurrence like it is on the CBS reality shows.
But on Community, was it like a meta sort of thing where it was like they did it because they knew it would, you know, like, I don't think that the producers of Community necessarily would want to have a hashtag. Like, I feel like if you have to tell people what the hashtag is, it sort of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, the hashtag was, I guess, spoiler alert for anyone who wants to watch season 5 completely unspoiled or didn't read any sort of like casting notices before the season started. It was hashtag goodbye Troy during Donald Glover's last episode. It was like the very last thing to show up on the screen.
Yeah. I wonder if NBC did that more than Community.
Yeah. I'm sure Dan Harmon was not clamoring for the hashtag on that one.
Yeah. All right. So interesting to follow along. Although, and I'm, when I say that if you have to tell people what it is, I mean that specifically on a scripted show. If you have to tell people on scripted TV what the hashtag is, then I feel like, I think Walking Dead might also get into that also, I feel like, in the commercial break. Like, use hashtag whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I think it really depends on the show as well. Especially, you know, I don't know if Game of Thrones wants to use hashtags.
Yeah. It feels weird on scripted, but it's perfect on reality. We love it on reality. Are you interested to know how any of the particular hashtags did? For instance, if I take a peek at Monopoly Slumlord.
If you want to take a look, if you want to take a look at both, I'm personally more interested in hashtag bald and beautiful, just because I want to see like if at least any links of Tumblr blogs of like gorgeous balding men.
Yeah. All right, so through the East Coast airing of Last Comic Standing, we're recording this right after the East Coast airing, I would say that Monopoly Slumlord probably, it was pretty, this was a good showing for Monopoly Slumlord. Lots of tweets about Monopoly Slumlord. So I feel like from when we first started tracking these things, especially during Survivor Blood versus Water, I feel like some of them were like really sparsely used, but they're catching on.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk more about this, obviously, but it's also a little odd that one of the hashtags went to a person who ultimately did not get put through to the next round.
Okay, well, let's talk about the big picture on the night. So 7 people advance here on Last Comic Standing, night number 3. And it was a weird night. It was a night where, so the 7 people that advanced were Chloe Hilliard, Alingon Minta, is it my
saying? I think it's Alingon.
Alingon, like maybe. Klingon?
Yes, he's... Okay. It's a secret Klingon.
Whoa. I'm sure that is something that is ripe with comic material, to be a Klingon tax accountant.
Yeah, he's his uncle is Worf.
Oh, my God. There is no honor in unlawful deductions.
In stand-up comedy.
Yeah. Then we had also advancing was Gerald Kelly. Or is it Gerard Kelly?
I think it's Gerald Kelly.
Okay. I'm typing so fast. He was somebody that was in a montage, so it's hard to put the name down. Then we had Zainab Johnson.
Yep, Francesca on stilts.
Yeah. And then we have DC Benny. Then we have Emily Galati and Rocky Laporte. And so it was sort of a mixed bag where we had, we had packages that we saw for Chloe, saw a package for Alingon, we saw a package for Rocky, and then 3 people come to us that were just like the last people in montages.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting editing.
So, and then we had just 1 person who came in with no package, but pretty much if you came out and had no package and weren't in a montage, you were pretty much toast. And if you were the last person in a montage, it was a good night for you.
Yeah, exactly. There's kind of saving the best for last in these little pre-packaged segments.
But I feel like, I think it's a failure on the part of the show where that we have 3 people here that end up advancing and they were in montages. And I just feel like if their set was so good, why didn't we get to see more of it?
Yeah, you know, I can understand the idea of producers wanting to kind of hook the audience into the stories of these contestants, but I think it would have been both a little more fair and a little more even if you had just done the invitations were just people came out and did stand up. There were no prepackaged stories beforehand, and then maybe you do a show or packages for each semifinalist. So not only do you give more time for each semifinalist, but that way you get to know all of them before they inevitably choose 10 to go into the house.
Yeah. And so for the most part, of the people that we had packages on, 3 out of 4 ended up making it. Kelly Price is the only one who doesn't make it. So I guess we can't fault the show too much. I guess I'm just saying, for the people that we spent a lot of time with that didn't get through, I'm not sure why we didn't spend more time with the people who did get through.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, Kelly's story was nice. I mean, we'll talk about her a little bit later, but I would rather get the story on someone like Emily Galati or Gerald Kelly over, 5 minutes dedicated to her life.
Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about the people that got through and talk about whether or not they are contenders or pretenders. And let's start with Chloe Hilliard. And Chloe, she was the first one to get through. She was, of course, she lived in the neighborhood with all the Hasidic Jews. And she likes to go to hotel rooms and feels like a king or a queen in a hotel room, and she needs an ice bucket.
Yeah, I'm a little lukewarm on her. I don't know how you feel.
Well, I'm very lukewarm on her.
I mean, I completely agree with what Keenan told her. Keenan was actually very, very on point with his critiques this episode. They seem very pointed, and they're very constructive, which is good. Honestly, I don't know if someone like Rack of the Porter, for instance, who's been in the business for 26 years, will actually take his advice to heart. But it's good that we're having that instead of a lot of these talent shows just have a lot of judges kind of kissing ass for everybody, which is sort of what Roseanne is doing. But it's nice to have that balance to it.
Yeah. So we had, we got the stuff about the Hasidic Jews. We got to meet the rabbi. And it was a nice story, but I have to say that nothing she said was, I did not find to be that hilarious.
No, and sorry, I digress from that. I agree with Keenan in saying that she had something going with this, being part of a Jewish neighborhood, because that's a very, very rare occurrence, obviously. But then she sort of digressed into observational humor that didn't necessarily tie back. And I guess it had a nice little wrap up on its own, but she's got a very interesting point of view, and we want to see more of that. I have to admit that in her package, when she talked about like how she feels that a lot of the racial humor that's used nowadays is kind of cheapened, I wasn't so hot on that idea. I'm sure she didn't mean to come off like it, but it sort of came off to me that she feels like she's like above that type of humor.
Yeah, she was like, because I feel like it diminishes that we're all human beings. Like, I just felt like on a comedy show, I felt like that was a little pious.
Yeah, not to mention that, not to go too back into the history of African-American stand-up comedy, but a lot of these comedians like Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, Chris Rock, all sort of had this big boom and brought their names to the scene because their humor was so racialized to begin with, and because they were able to connect with that audience that a lot of white comedians weren't able to. So it's sort of like you have to learn from your elders. I'm not saying go out there and just talk about being a black woman the whole time, but I don't think we necessarily need to say that it cheapens the fact that we're all human beings.
Right. Now, Mike, do we know now, was this the last of the invitationals?
This was not. I believe we have two more coming up.
Oh my God. How many people are going to the semifinals?
That's the thing. That's the big problem. One of the commenters pointed me towards an article that said that they're going to pick 20, but right now we're at 21.
21. Yeah.
So apparently, according to epguides.com, which you talked about last week, there are episodes going on for the next 2 weeks.
Of semifinals or invitationals?
Yeah, of invitationals.
Boy, how many invitations did we send out?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, apparently 100 contestants were invited. I don't know where those 100 went to, because so far I think we've probably seen about maybe 40 at the most.
Well, we've definitely seen more than 40 comedians, right?
Well, this episode we saw 16 total.
Yeah.
So I guess if we multiply that by three, it's 48.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So, well, let's keep on moving. Even though we don't, I wish the show would give us a little more information about, you know, what we were seeing and where we were going with all this.
I mean, it's just a fun game that we all get to play together with the listeners as well of how is this show going to be constructed?
Yeah, I mean, even in the narration of the show, like, there's very little instruction of, like, all right, who's ready for more comedy? Like, all right, let's get right back into it.
Yeah, apparently.
Okay, so the second person who moves on is Alingon Mitra.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I feel like he was very good. He had a package. We got to check it out, and we know about him. And his comedy was good. And I feel like this was a win-win here.
Yeah, I would definitely say he had a strong set. If I may play devil's advocate, I do believe, and this was probably chalked up to nerves, I think his set was a little. I mean, obviously, all the sets are scripted, but his delivery felt a little scripted. If that made sense. Like, and the big, I mean, the joke for me was the whole, like, you know, you fake coming out to your parents and then they say we knew all along. Like, I've probably heard that joke at least 10 to 15 times at this point. But the rest of it was very funny. I liked his joke right out of the gate of people don't know what my ethnicity is. They say, you know, go make me a taco. And I say, I'm actually Indian. He says, no, go make me a taco. Your break's over.
Yeah,
I thought he liked navigating those like twist endings at the end of jokes. So he's got a lot of potential.
Okay, so let's go ahead and anything else on him? Do you want to talk about eating the banana from both ends?
Yeah, that's it's quite a phrase. It's like one of the, it feels like one of those like Game of Thrones phrases, like the Myrinese knot.
That wouldn't have made a good hashtag.
Hashtag eat the banana from both ends.
Banana double ender.
Well, you know, you don't want to get in the way of banana etiquette. So we learned from Heroes versus Villains.
Yeah. Well, that is true. What would be the banana etiquette on that?
I mean, if you eat the banana from both ends, do it in the cave where no one can watch you.
Oh, no. Let's talk about Gerald Kelly, who was part of a montage. Actually, so I think he was the first guy to go in a montage, and then Zainab Johnson was the last person in this montage. So sort of like, if you're in the middle of a montage, you are screwed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the next few that went anyway, the jokes that they showed weren't really that strong anyway. So
yeah.
they were not very shown as strong from the get-go.
So he talked about how he helped his kid with his homework and he got 2 zeros and he went to the school and a lot of people were asking him, is that your child?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm the only one that got this sense, but did you get like a Rodney Dangerfield type of vibe from him?
I cannot say that crossed my mind.
I'm probably a little crazy in that, but that's what I kind of thought of like this type of like, he's got a very interesting delivery style, and I think it's very similar to Rodney in terms of like his whole shtick is like, can you believe this? Like, I'm so stupid that my son got 2 zeros, one for me, one for you. Like, it feels very old school in his delivery, which is interesting and exciting. So and I like how he talked about his the allure of his eyes, which I didn't really get to see until his close up at the very end.
Yeah. So. Yeah, his eyes were very interesting. Is that his, that's a very unique look.
Yeah, it's a very, I mean, eyes over abs. I guess it's the new way to go.
That is the way to go. All right, let's talk about Zainab Johnson.
Mm.
And I thought it was interesting they went with the hashtag bald and beautiful, and that was never said.
Yeah, I thought they were going to do hashtag give it up for my mom's vagina, personally, but I don't know how taboo NBC is.
It's a little long. It's eating up a lot of characters.
That's true.
So she feels like a lot of these guys are asking her to be crazy. So
Yeah, it was like it was about like how her ex-boyfriend called her crazy when she's like, and it was interesting because like, it didn't necessarily, it was very smart. I really enjoyed the latter half of her bit because part of it wasn't even stand up. It just turned into like, almost like just like a venting slam poetry session of her being like, you know, you call me crazy for keying the car. I am crazy because it was my car. Like, it was a very like, you know, it's weird to think that all that stuff happened to her.
You would think so. So you feel like she's making stuff up?
No. I'm just saying that it's just odd that like all those things, it's just odd circumstances that all those things happened. But I did like, I liked her delivery a lot. She clearly commanded that stage. She's clearly very comfortable in her POV. I mean, I think she has a lot of stuff to mine for with the 12 siblings as well. She kind of just barely scratched the surface and talked more about her parents, but I'm sure there's plenty of material from having 12 siblings in one house.
Yeah. And what is her background? Is she, do you know what her, where she's from?
I don't believe so. I want to say New York,
just
but I...
Zainab is not a name you hear every day.
Yeah, let me see if there's anything. Her debut was on the Arsenio Hall show, so that's fun.
The new one or the old one?
The new one, because the article I'm reading is from February 2014.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm looking at her on Twitter. Zainab Johnson on Twitter. So not a huge Twitter follower count. If that means anything.
It's interesting. They have the top 100 in like a list on the Last Comic Standing Twitter page, and obviously depending on how visible they are, their following and their tweeting kind of varies.
Yeah. By the way, I can see that one fellow, you know, it tells you the common people that follow this person. Mm-hmm. One fellow survivor also follows. Well, I don't follow her yet. If she advances, if she gets into the final 12, I'll follow her. One fellow survivor follows her. Do you want to guess who it is?
What season are they on?
Okay, Survivor South Pacific.
So I'm thinking she's from the East Coast, so it's not Cochran. Is it Albert?
No.
Is it... I guess I'll keep guessing. Is
female,
it...
Female.
Female. Is it Sophie?
No. We were
Edna?
Looking for Semhar.
Okay, you know what? Now that I think about it, the two of them would probably be good friends.
Yeah, probably. You get Semhar doing poetry and Zainab Johnson telling jokes. That's a party.
Yeah, Zainab could tell Semhar stories about, you know, stuff that her ex-boyfriend did, and Semhar could write poems about it and recite them to God knows who.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so then the fifth person who moves through is DC Benny. Now, I noticed that DC Benny, who's the only person to get through who was not in a package or in a montage, he's the only one that survived the coming out of commercial break. Give it up for... and then DC Benny was the only person that got through in that had that particular setup. So I noticed that DC Benny is from DC. Is DC Benny sort of like a Boston Rob moniker?
I was going to say, that probably makes a lot of sense. Maybe he has friends outside of DC that is also named Ben. So he's like, oh, I got to be DC Benny. Because, otherwise, if it was a Washington, DC thing, according to his bits, he would have been called just White Benny. I don't know how much he'd be able to make in the comedy world with the name White Benny.
Okay, so he's DC Benny. Maybe there was another guy, Ben DeCaneo, and so they had to be DC Benny.
Yeah, exactly. No, that was the Admiral.
The Admiral. Okay, so DC Benny, I gotta say, I was not super impressed with DC Benny.
Yeah, the only bit that I really enjoyed was the... confusing the homeless man doing Tai Chi in the park for the confused, it's just one of those heroin guys that can't really sit down, just because I liked his physicality behind it. It was one of those things that didn't make a lot of sense until you actually acted out. Otherwise, I mean, his jokes were basically, one was, I was a white kid in a school full of black people, and the other one was this very long, drawn out joke about auditioning for a drug dealer that wasn't really, you know, like, the punchline was like a little hokey, to be honest.
Yeah, I was not super impressed with what he did. I feel like there were other people that didn't get through. I thought like that did a better job than what he did.
And that if I were him, I was playing obviously like Monday morning, Thursday evening quarterback. I probably would have focused more on him improvising in the room as the drug dealer. I thought he could have gotten a lot, you know, if he thought like, okay, what does a drug dealer think? Or what does a drug dealer say? But he just kind of rolled over that and just cut to this like kind of meh punchline.
Yeah. Not for anything. I'm not buying a lot of drugs on the street, but are there a lot of drug dealers that look like DC Benny?
Not in New York. I mean, maybe on like the Upper East Side, but
if you go to like a very like elite clientele, they look like DC Benny.
Yeah, exactly. If you want like the high class stuff, you visit drug lord DC Benny.
Yeah, like he's, you know, again, I'm seeing most of my drug buying on television, but you know, I didn't see anybody on The Wire or Breaking Bad that looked like DC Benny that was on the street.
Oh, well, maybe, you know, he could have been one of Saul Goodman's henchmen.
Maybe.
He like, you know, they Vince Gilligan likes to cast comedians for that. So
there you go. So maybe he could be in Better Call Saul.
Oh, that's true. DC, if you're listening to us, Vince Gilligan, and we know you are, please put DC Benny in Better Call Saul.
And make sure you get plenty of hashtags also in Better Call Saul.
Yeah, DC Benny can be, have his character be named, I don't know, like Mr. Hashtag.
Mr. Hashtag.
Yeah, it's very mysterious, and at the same time, it's very useful. He'll just come in and spout nonsensical hashtags.
His character name should be New Mexico or Albuquerque Benny.
It should be like, I am the one who hashtags.
So then the sixth person to get through is Emily Galati, who had a lot of Arizona-based humor, but I felt like she was funny.
Yeah, she was definitely funny. Her delivery reminded me a lot of Chelsea Paredes, who's a comic writer who was most recently has a role on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's a very like dry, kind of subdued sense of delivery. I thought her writing was a lot funnier than her delivery. So I agree with Roseanne's comment that it was really, really good writing. I bet you they cut out the part that said she was from Arizona, because she probably started the bit by saying that, which would have made a lot more sense than just saying apparently the Mexican-American war is over and nobody told Arizona.
Yeah, no. They could have given her a little more time. I think that's what the kind of stuff I mean when we're seeing her. If she's so funny, let us see her whole thing rather than, you know, I would rather see somebody who didn't get through, put them in the montage.
Yeah, but now I'm intrigued to see what she'll do in the semifinals, because she was also the one that interestingly enough, in her talking head interview after JB called her name, she's like, oh, well, now I have to write another set. Eep. It's like, oh, I didn't expect that out of you.
She only had 5 minutes, maybe.
Well, yeah, and she was ringing out those Arizona jokes, and it's clear that those are like were in her back pocket. So I wonder if she's going to go back to the well of Arizona is full of old people, which I mean, I don't necessarily equate Arizona with older people. I usually equate Florida more with that.
Yeah, I think Arizona is Florida for the West.
Okay, all right.
I think so.
Arizona for people who don't like the ocean.
Yes. And then the last person to get through is Rocky Laporte, who we got to see his package. We got to see a lot of his set. And I have to say, I wasn't super impressed.
No, I was in the beginning. I really wasn't wowed by his point of view of basically for a while. I don't know. I wouldn't equate these to like Amelia Bedelia jokes, but it was very similar in terms of like, he's like, how the doctor said, how's my hearing? I said, oh, I go to court on Tuesday. Like you could feel the rim shots that were supposed to go off after every one of those jokes. I'm not sure. I don't know if I necessarily agree with Russell that I would want to sit through an hour of that, but it's clear that he knows what is good. And he's, well, you know, he's been working the beat for 26 years at this point. It's it's a little hard. I do agree with Keenan and Roseanne that if he was going to take criticism, it would be to kind of pick up the pace, because there is such a thing as pacing to these bits, but he just kind of stayed on the same pace even when he was getting ramped up and got the audience on his side.
It seems to me there was a lot of cronyism through the first three nights of Last Comic Standing, because I feel like anybody where there was a mention where it's like, oh, I've worked with this person before, or I've heard this person's name before, or I hear good things about this person, I felt like without fail, I feel like those people all ended up getting through. Can you think of an example of somebody who somebody knew, whether it was through a friend of a friend or had been somebody who had been opening or on stage with any of the three judges?
I'm trying to think. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Let's watch for it next week and see if there's anybody that's like, oh yeah, like I know you worked for blah, blah, blah. And so then they got through.
Yeah, it's very interesting in that I feel like they feel indebted to do that, almost, the judges, to send those people through, just because comedy, just like any other entertainment business, is all about connections. It's all about who you know. So I feel like out of respect, they're like, okay, we've seen what you can do. We need to send you through, which, you know, might not necessarily be the best thing if they're sent through over a young up and coming comic who like has potential.
Mm-hmm. Right. Cause I kind of feel like some of the, you know, really like, is DC Benny or Rocky Laporte, like, are these guys going to really become like these huge, like breakout stars that are going to get their own show?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like of the veterans, the strongest one I've seen so far is Tracy Ashley from the very first round, last episode. The other guys feel like they feel very polished in their sets, but they might not be the most applicable to a modern audience, and they definitely are not the most applicable for a development deal.
But I feel like there's a difference between the person who's the 10-year stand-up comedian veteran who is like, okay, they've put in their 10,000 hours and they're ready to break out, and the person who's the 25-year stand-up comedy veteran where it's just, for whatever reason, it's never happened in their career. And, you know, I feel like I'd rather take a chance on the person who's the younger up-and-comer than the person who's the 25-year stand-up vet.
Yeah. And this is the problem with the Voice as well, is that they bring in sometimes a lot of people who already have had record deals or who are known for being in indie bands. And that can be a problem when they get through to the live rounds and basically all their fans just push to vote for them, or they have like Usher tweet to vote for them to all of his followers. It's a really slippery route to navigate. So we'll see if any of these guys get through to the live rounds. We'll see again who these veteran comedians end up backing through social media and what sort of frenzy evolves from that.
Okay, that'll be interesting. Let's talk about some of the people who did not get through, who we spent some more time with tonight. The show opened with Tony Baker, who I thought was actually pretty funny. He talked about how he has a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old, that his kid wanted a gym membership. He was afraid his kid was going to beat him up. He's afraid of being accosted while he's lathered up. And he's also the Monopoly slumlord smoking Newports.
Yeah, his bits were interesting. They seemed a little slipshod to me. I just feel like
slipshod. A hashtag slipshod. I'm putting hashtag that on the bottom of the screen.
Hashtag slipshod. Hashtag all. I think hashtag like lathered up would have been a fun one too. But he was. I mean, it was three completely different subjects that really didn't connect at all. I, in fact, was pretty astounded that they didn't cut it after he went through his whole lather thing, and he went on to talking about playing Monopoly with his kids. I again have to agree with the judges, Keenan specifically telling him that he needed, you know, they liked this whole idea of the emasculated father with his 14-year-old son. And they thought, you know, if you add more detail to that and focus on that a little more, that's great stuff you're mining right there. And they didn't think you need to necessarily add in all the stuff about, you know, accidentally running into home invaders naked.
Yeah. Which, you know, that could be an issue, though.
Yeah, well, Kevin McAllister could have used that.
Why, Kevin? Well, is that why Kevin McAllister didn't spend a lot of time bathing? I mean, he did have that one scene where he's putting on aftershave, but he never really got lathered up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, he could have I mean, if he ended up running into the Wet Bandits, they could be put away for a lot more than house robbery.
All right. Yes. Those are charges that are, you know, that's probably even more time.
Yeah. Chris Columbus, I know you're listening to this. If you do, please make an alternate ending to Home Alone where they get charged with pedophilia.
Oh, my God. we have so many great listeners between Vince Gilligan and Chris Columbus.
It's the RHAP bump.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So let's talk about then. So then we got a Ling On, and we saw DC Benny, and then we saw Kelly Price, and we got to see Kelly Price's package. And she's a mom. She has four kids. And then we got a lot of her stand up. Also, we saw her tell a few different jokes, but the judges seemed to really not like that she was telling jokes about basically that nobody wants to bang her, but then she has four kids, and they didn't really care for that.
Yeah, I agree. It was a little inconsistent. Honestly, her strongest material was definitely at the latter half when it was, again, skewing from the observational more towards the story based and talking with her husband about the sexual role playing fantasy. And she just ripped on that for a good 3 minutes. And I thought that was the strongest part of her set. She didn't necessarily need this whole stuff about the plastic surgery in LA and being a unicorn that nobody wants to have sex with, because obviously that's not true.
Yeah. And you know, somebody obviously is, because she has a bunch of kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently. Which of her kids' names did you like the best? Aiden, Amira, Peter, or Penelope?
Penelope is nice.
The one that wasn't planned.
It's a surprise.
Yeah. I hope, you know, if little Penelope looks back and when she's like 10 or so and watches her mom on Last Comic Standing, I hope she doesn't take offense to that.
Yeah. I mean, and if her husband didn't actually say, I want to put the schoolgirl dress on, I feel like that's a little bit of a hacky joke.
That's what I initially thought. That was a pretty hacky joke, too. Because, again, that's one of those ones that I've heard at least 10 or 15 times before. But, again, I really liked how it went into the whole thing about, like, him taking the teacher role, his weird dress for the teacher role, and then him fantasizing that they were at a community college instead of some sort of prestigious university.
Yeah. I thought that was very funny. Okay, let's talk about Randy Liedtke. Am I saying
Liedtke,
right?
Yeah, Liedtke. I believe so.
And Mike, as I was watching this, I said, I bet Mike really liked this guy.
you were right. I definitely enjoyed him. I enjoyed him a lot more than Dave Kronberg, but that's, you know.
Ben Kronberg.
Ben Kronberg. How could I forget?
How quickly we forget?
But that's like saying, you know, that you liked a laugh track better than Ben Kronberg. I think he was able to take what Ben's ideas and make him work a little bit better. I think they were a little all over the place, but I did enjoy a lot of his stuff. You know, the Mark Ruffalo's Buffalo Ruffalo's. I thought was had a lot of setup for such a weird punchline.
Yeah, it was. I thought he was very, very fun. Now, did you feel like whose cell phone bit worked better, Randy or Ben Kronberg?
Oh, that's a tough one, because I thought Randy could have had a much better execution to it. I don't even think Randy needed the other cell phone. I thought he could have just literally held up the phone behind him and said it. That's what I thought he was going to do initially. I think Randy was wise not to start off with it as our friend Ben did, because that was definitely not a good way to start off any stand-up comedy set. I think Randy immediately got the crowd on his side by kind of telling that really hacky joke and then immediately capping it off with like, stand up guys, come on.
Yeah, so I thought he was very, very fun. I feel like with the cell phone bit with the ventriloquist, I felt like he like laid a lot of track for that, and I feel like that if you're gonna do all that, like the punchline has to be huge, and so I feel like the payoff for that wasn't worth all of the work that went into it.
Yeah, and the joke, the part the audience laughed at the most wasn't even the voice on the phone itself, it was him explaining that he had to buy two phones for that joke.
Yeah.
So you know that, like, when your, like, ad-libbed additional punchline is funnier than your initial punchline, you know your writing might be a little bit off then.
Can I say one more note about Ben Kronberg?
Oh, please.
Yes. So I ran into my friend Nuzzy, who's the host of the Nuzzy and the Guy podcast, and he says that he is friends with Ben Kronberg and said that Ben Kronberg is a funnier guy than when it was portrayed last week.
Yeah, it seems like...
Ben Kronberg is a good guy, was what basically he was saying.
That seems to be the consensus. I mean, I sent you an article earlier that kind of interviewed Ben and talked about what had happened from his point of view and everything. And he got support from people, from such prestigious people as Brooks Whelan from SNL.
Oh, wait, Brooks Whelan said something?
Yeah, Brooks Whelan did the, so Ben Kronberg did the, as we talked about last week, tried to popularize the hashtag go F yourself, Ben. And Brooks Whelan was one of the people to tweet that.
Okay.
And so I guess they're buddies, or Brooks is trying to get a spot in Last Comic Standing season 9.
Yeah. So let me just look at Brooks Whelan on Twitter. Oh my God. Brooks Whelan verified on Twitter.
Oh, good.
30,400 followers for Brooks Whelan.
All right, so maybe he got Ben Kronberg's true story out to all those 30,000 people.
Yeah. Okay. Boom. He's got the word out. So then I was surprised that Randy didn't get through. I'm trying to think of anybody else that we spent a lot of time with. You know what? I was complaining at the beginning of the show. I kind of feel like that those were the only two people that we spent time with that didn't get through.
Yeah.
Feel like of the show that we saw tonight, then we had a bunch of the montage people didn't get through. So I can't complain too much.
Yeah, and the montage people weren't even really that, like, the jokes they were showing were definitely not good. Like, you had this one guy, Vinny Brand, who talks about, who had a joke about, like, I have 6 kids. Isn't that crazy? Kids are like pancakes. You got to burn a couple before you get a good one. And then you had like jokes that, like, you had like Lion King jokes, which were very, I don't know who he was appealing to with that. They were pretty weak jokes from those who did not get through.
Okay. And so we still have no idea what's going on with the judging. Not too much for JB Smoove to do tonight either.
Unfortunately not. Hopefully his role will increase a little bit once A, they go to the house, and B, once they go to the live shows, and he'll be a bit more of an MC. But right now, yeah, he's basically just a kind of a plaque to read names off of.
Yeah, and read names very loudly.
Yes, he's a plaque with a megaphone duct taped to it.
All right, let's take some of the questions from the listeners of Rob as a Podcast. I posted a Facebook thread. I'll try to do that every week. If you watch the show on the East Coast feed, you can post your questions, and Mike and I will get to them. Ray Shirey says, stunned, Randy was left out. Damn it. First, Community gets canceled. Now this. NBC always lets me down.
I'm sorry. I mean, like, sorry, man, that's tough, but you always kind of have to have low expectations with NBC. It's kind of been the case for a few years now. Well,
they were one of the big success stories this season.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so, though. The prognosis is looking very interesting.
A couple people commented on Roseanne's mic, and Melissa wants to say, why is Roseanne's mic on so loud? We have to listen to her laugh during the sets. If no one else is laughing, or do the producers like her laugh the best?
I think the producers probably do like it, because I think they do want, that's why they cut to the judges so much during each person's individual set, is because they want to see the judges' reaction, and they want to see, because the judges are kind of supposed to be the peripheral between us, the audience, and the comedians themselves. So there have to be like, the judges are liking it, so you should like it too. So I think they do want to kind of keep Roseanne in there to be like, laugh like Roseanne does at this comedian.
It is really crazy, though, through 3 nights of this show, 3 hours of the show, the only person who got crap from the judges was Ben Kronberg. Like, he really got, you know, buried by the show. and not even one other person, like, at worst got like, I think some of that stuff wasn't your best. Like, he's the only person that any of the judges were hard on at all.
Yeah, I mean, again, going back to this idea of the comedy community, I think they wanted to kind of be as nice as possible. I think Ben, they probably just felt very disrespected by, just because if you go out and you start your bit by doing absolutely nothing for 30 seconds and then just kind of, you know, rattling off one-liners, and then one of the things that they don't show that Ben talked about in his interview that wasn't shown on the show is that Keenan brings up that his act is very gimmicky, and then Ben retorts by saying, well, isn't this show kind of gimmicky? And then it kind of causes the crowd to erupt into an uproar. So I don't think Ben's responses were necessarily the most appropriate for this type of setting.
Oh, no. All right. Well, at least he got his name out there.
Yeah, absolutely. He got a bunch of hashtags. He got SNL featured players on his side. So he is golden.
And even though you thought he was Dave Kronberg.
Yes. Well, hopefully Dave Kronberg will now get the RJP bump, whoever that may be.
Some guy's like, oh my God, I got so many followers last night.
Yes. Chris Columbus and Vince Gilligan, please cast Dave Kronberg in your new pilots and movie reboots.
He could be the sidekick of Albuquerque Benny.
Albuquerque Benny, the hashtag bandit.
All right. Melissa also wants to know, would you ever go to a tax consultant practice named The Guru? was that what the Alingon tax practice was?
It was. And I, unfortunately, it's so bad, but whenever I see The Guru, it makes me think of The Love Guru, unfortunately. So, which is also sad because that is a bad movie where Mike Myers pretends to be Indian. So it's got a bad bad kind of stigma behind it. But I mean, if they're proud of it and if they're getting clients, then they can be the gurus if they want to.
Going back to last week to look at the comments from the last episode that we did, Ari posted that Last Comic Standing 8 is going to be a 13-episode season. Now, is the first episode, did that count as two? Or like, are we like 25% of the way through the season?
I think the first 2-hour episode was counted as one episode.
Okay.
If we're going, I know this was confusing with Survivor as well. So I think right now we technically are done with episode 2.
Yeah. Okay.
Which would make sense if they're doing the next 2 episodes of Invitationals as well, because that'll be 4 episodes of Invitationals.
Are you sure people are going to live in a house this season? Like,
that's what they advertised.
Because the whole show seems like it's just going to be the Invitationals and then the semifinals and then the finals.
Well, let's think about it. I think they'll do 4 shows of Invitationals. They'll probably do 1 show of semifinals, just since they're getting it down to 10. That leaves 8 episodes. They'll probably do they can probably do anywhere from like 3 or 4 house episodes, and then the rest will be the live episodes. So I think I know it seems like it's not a lot, but we're only 3 episodes. We're only 2 episodes in, and we have more than half of our semifinalists. So I think there's still some room for leverage there.
I kind of feel like that, you know, I would have been fine if the Invitationals were just like on NBC.com and, you know, you want to see more of the people that didn't make the house. And I kind of feel like the first episode should be, here are the 12 comedians that are competing to be the Last Comic Standing moving into the house.
Yeah. I mean, again, if we had gone with this format that I kind of suggested at the beginning of the podcast, where it was don't show the packages, they could have crammed, instead of 16, they probably could have crammed at least like 20, maybe even 25 in an episode, so they could get it done in 3 episodes or 2 2-hour episodes instead of having to extend this to like a 4-week process.
Yeah. So basically, Last Comic Standing really, really taking their sweet ass time with getting wherever they're going, but they still haven't told us where they're going.
Yeah, well, they need to fill those summer slots since there's no Olympics.
No Olympics. Okay, well, they can't all be Olympic years.
Unfortunately not.
Okay. All right, well, I'd love to know what you guys thought about this week's episode of Last Comic Standing. Of course, the Last Comic Standing recap. Next week, Mike and I will be back to cover Invitationals Night 4.
Technically, episode three.
All right. And we'll see what happens if we get any more insight. And if you see anything online, if you see something, say something. Let us know if you uncover any of the clues of what is going to happen next on Last Comic Standing and where is this ultimately going.
Yeah. Well, who needs whodunit this summer when you have this mystery?
Yes. Perfect. DC. So Mike, I've got one heck of a podcast coming up on Friday afternoon. Have you seen the sizzle reel for the new upcoming hit show, Holding Hands?
No, I have, I've been saving that for a rainy day when I know I'm like really down on my life and I need to pick me up, but I am super excited to see what is going on with this Hance family.
All right. So I'm scheduled to talk to Russell Hance about what he is up to with this. Basically, it's like Hance All-Stars.
Oh my goodness.
So basically there is a video that Russell is, he's got out there on social media. It's basically all the entire Hance family of Russell Hance, Sean Hance, Willie Hance, Brandon Hance. There's all these other Hances, and they're all together and they're opening a restaurant.
Can you ask him for me when the Hance family Christmas special is coming out?
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. The Hances are like the Baldwins of reality TV.
Yeah, I would say so. I was going to say they're the Kardashians of reality TV, but the Kardashians have already kind of cornered their own section of reality TV off.
Yeah, so fantastic. And much like the Baldwin's family, like we used to think that Alec Baldwin was sort of like the normal one. The Baldwins are probably more Hance-like than we ever realized.
Yeah, I guess so, especially within like the core four men between, you know, Russell and Willie and Sean and Brandon. That's like their own... I would love to see that Survivor season. Survivor Hances versus Baldwins.
Oh my God.
Jeff Probst, I know you're listening.
Hances versus Baldwins. Oh, that would be huge. Would it be a blood versus water season?
I mean, there'd be a lot of blood, no matter what.
Oh my God. All right. So that's going to be on Friday. Plus, I've got a whole bunch of podcasts that I did during this week. We talked with Netta from Big Brother Canada on Thursday, and that interview's on robinswebsite.com. Plus, we did our season wrap-up special talking about everything from our Survivor Cagayan closeout special on Rob Has a Website. Josh Wigler and I talked about all of that stuff. So plenty of reality TV podcasts this week on the RHAP. Boom.
Yeah. Yeah, boom. It's a good week. The summer is just starting to ramp up. Now that you feel rested after Memorial Day.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not at the breakneck pace that I was at during the Survivor seasons. This is very nice.
Yeah, so now you have some time to sit up and have us remark on all these comedians and their packages.
Yeah, that's right. My favorite pastime. All right, so everybody have a good week. We'd love to hear from you guys in the comments, and let us know what you think of the show. Take care, everybody. Bye.